The Voice of America.
白宫认为普京受到误导，侵略乌克兰犯下战略错误。美国贸易代表表示，必须遏制中国损害美国利益的经济行为。拜登总统接种第二针新冠加强针，宣布对抗疫情一站式服务。
各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。白宫表示，情报显示俄罗斯总统普京受到军方高层的误导而侵略乌克兰，犯下战略错误。今天的节目中我们一同关注。乌克兰政府及西方盟友星期三表示，不相信俄罗斯有关减少基辅方面军事行动的说法。乌克兰认为这是俄军在遭受严重损失之后需要进行修整和重组的计谋。俄军对乌克兰其他城市的狂轰滥炸并未收敛，对南部港口城市马里乌波尔摧毁式的炮击更是有增无减。乌克兰总统泽连斯基星期二说，他不会轻信莫斯科所说的话。美国总统拜登星期三与乌克兰总统泽连斯基通话，拜登承诺向乌克兰提供更多的援助。美国新解密的情报显示，俄罗斯对乌克兰的入侵正在俄罗斯总统普京与他的高级军事顾问之间造成不和。普京受到军事高层人员的误导，犯下战略错误。详细情况请美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅来介绍。耀毅。
是白宫这个公布了一份解密的这个文件呢，在当中显示呢，这个俄罗斯总统普丁是受到他自己认为他受到了这个他身边的下属官员的误导还有蒙蔽，导致犯下了战略错误，在这个乌克兰的战事方面。那么现在呢，根据情报显示，普丁跟他的军方将领之间的关系是焦灼而且紧张的。而根据这份这个解密的文件当中也显示呢，普丁并不知情有被征兵的俄罗斯的这个士兵呢被派往前线，而且还战死了。那我们知道之前普丁是一再的强调并没有使用征兵的这样子一个制度。那在此外呢，这个俄罗斯的国防部呢也宣称啊，他们的官方数据是现在俄罗斯战死的士兵人数是1351人，而北约来预计的这个俄军死亡人数则是介于7000人到15000人之间。那么在星期三的白宫新闻简报会上呢，白宫的联络室主任 Kate Bedingfield 呢，他就表示说，这场战争就是一个普丁的战略错误。我们看一下他在白宫怎么说。
We have information that Putin felt misled by the Russian military, which has resulted in persistent tension between Putin and his military leadership. We believe that Putin is being misinformed by his advisors about how badly the Russian military is performing and how the Russian economy is being crippled by sanctions because his senior advisors are too afraid to tell him the truth. So it is increasingly clear.That Putin's war has been a strategic blunder that has left Russia weaker over the long term and increasingly isolated on the world stage.
那被问到了是否是拜登总统来亲自授意解密这份文件，借此来公开羞辱普丁，并且呢来影响乌克兰跟这个俄罗斯现在正在进行的谈判，对此呢白宫只表示不予评论。不过呢，这个 Bedingfield 他也指出呢，俄罗斯已经从原本要来攻占基辅这样子的目标改变了他们的说法，而选在此时解密呢，是要让世人看清楚普丁的战略失误。那至于如何影响正在进行的谈判，则不予揣测。那除了这个曝光普丁的战略失误呢，也不会放松对俄罗斯制裁，而且会持续的支援乌克兰。此外，拜登总统在星期三的上午跟乌克兰总统泽连斯基谈了55分钟，商讨前线战场还有与这个俄罗斯谈判的最新情况。白宫之后呢，就宣布了对乌克兰实施新的额外5亿美元的援助。而泽连斯基在推特上说呢，他跟拜登总统谈到了关于俄罗斯新一轮的制裁，还有国防的支援。对此呢，白宫联络室主任Bedingfield 则是表示不予评论。卡拉。
好的，感谢耀毅的详细报道。 美国贸易代表戴奇周二表示，拜登政府必须更直接地面对北京经济行为所造成的有害后果。戴奇说，中国没有迫于压力履行特朗普政府任内签署的贸易协议中的承诺。他重申，现有的工具无法达到惩罚的目的。戴奇说，美国的战略必须扩大，不仅仅是施加压力，迫使中国改变，还要能够强力捍卫美国的价值观和经济利益，不受中国不公平经济政策和行为的伤害。拜登总统星期三接种了第四剂辉瑞新冠疫苗，并呼吁符合标准的民众尽快接种。周二，美国批准为50岁以上的民众接种第四剂辉瑞和莫德纳新冠疫苗。拜登也呼吁国会尽快通过新的公共健康法案，确保疫苗和医药品的供应。同时，中国坚持实施动态清零，上海封城引发民怨。公共政策专家说，继续坚持两年前的防疫政策，是习近平为获得第三任期铺路的维稳手段。来听一听新加坡国立大学公共政策教授吴木鸾的说法。
你是怎么看这种，就是这种清零这种防疫政策？
现在呢，基本上，全世界的范围呢有三种模式，一个就是英美这种模式，因为这种模式到了一定地步，他就认为已经达到群体免疫，所以基本上所有的这个防疫措施也都已经取消掉了啊，所以基本上就是说，你自己像一个应对流感一样的来应对这种疫情，那。新加坡是属于中间状态，新加坡其实有很多华人是非常担心的，所以对这种所谓的这个放宽措施实际上是逐步进行的，就是说包括现在室内实际上还是要求戴口罩的，如果你假设在你的工作场所，但是室外呢是没有要求戴口罩的，基本上新加坡呢其实是采取了一个跟医学证据比较接近的一个路径，也就是说比如第一大策略就是疫苗策略，就是我一定要用比较好的 mRNA 的疫苗来处理这个疫情。第二个呢就是说，如果假设你是不幸感染了，那就是在家里面居家康复，也就是说如果假设不是说重症那就不用去医院，所以它总的来说在慢慢淡化这种疫情的这种管理，那但是它不会说突然间一天就完全没有疫情管理的措施。中国呢其实是用2020年的方法来应对2022年的情况，原因在于就是说它一直把这个当成意识形态，它一直跟外面说它这个实际上是救了很多生命，但是它没有估计到就是说你救了一些生命之外呢，其实好多老百姓如果假设说手停口停，其实对他们生活来说造成很大的压力，甚至会造成很多精神病人，其实是现在就是说包括你可以看到很多自媒体在说有很多人自杀，有很多人家庭暴力，这其实在其他国家都发生过，在封城在这种比较极端的这种防疫措施的情况下，很多国家都面临这样的问题，但中国就认为说只要没死人啊，我就是我的政绩，那这个其实是思路是不对。
我打断您一下吴教授，就清零的这样的政策，防疫的政策耽误了治疗其他的，比如说急诊病人，结果导致就是说这个病人呢就失去生命或者是健康受到这个损失，不是没有这样的例子。当然刚才你也提到，就是有些人精神上有了精神上的疾病，有去自杀的这种情况都有。那么这些情况现在既然已经浮现出来了，为什么中国还要一定要坚持这个清零政策呢？你觉得
这个就涉及到医疗伦理，就是说其实到2021年大家有疫苗之后呢，大家其实就没有那么担心，特别在很多国家逐步开放的原因就是说有很强的很好的这个疫苗，特别是 mRNA 的这个疫苗之后呢，其实是大家就认为说不应该把新冠救治放在第一位，因为好多疾病都比新冠还要严重一点，特别是癌症。那这里面就是说中国其实是有点点就是自己套在自己的一个故事里面，就是他其实坚持的一种意识形态，就是认为救治新冠就是一个政治任务，那其他东西都不重要。所以在这种情况下，你其实就是说一个新冠病人甚至可能新冠的轻症完全跟癌症啊还有一些 重的一些疾病来说，实际上是非常轻的东西，但他不断的夸大，就认为说这种即使轻症也可能有后遗症，所以他现在基本上是把自己套上了这种所谓的这种零病例，还有这种所谓清零政策。上海其实是蛮危险，到底最后会不会影响到养老院，影响到这些最弱的这些群体来说，其实是不知道的。因为这个新的这个变种 Omicron 实际上是传播率非常非常高，这个其实是你很难说你一直这样做可以持续的。当然现在最大的变数大家心中有数的，就是其实是所谓习近平他自己的政策，他呢他这个政策呢其实是非常一致，就是说一定要有一个目标，就是清零，你不管清零还是动态清零。但是有一个重要的时间点是他想做他的第三轮，那就是一定要到今年年底，甚至有可能到明年两会上去确认他的所谓政府那边的地位。所以在这种情况下，他有可能的思路就是一定要维护稳定，所以他不希望政策变动带来很多不同的调整，然后还很多利益集团的一些利益上受损还有得益。所以这里面我相信对他来说，他可能觉得保持现状是最好，但是问题是现在这个病毒其实是高度传播的，所以我现在真不知道他接下去几个月怎么应对这个问题。
当今真相为重，掌握全球脉动，只要点击 VOA Plus， 手指移动，信息即来，追踪政治动向，体验真实生活，世界各地的声音随时随地轻松获取。现在就下载 VOA Plus 应用程序 ，VOA Plus。
继续收看美国观察。中国恒大集团爆发财务危机之前，与哈佛大学附属医院布莱根合作，在海南博鳌建立了一座面向富人而富人并不买单的医院。波士顿环球报调查发现，这起合作的失败并不令人意外。来看美国之音的报道。
Team recently wrote an investigative story on how the Harvard-affiliated Brigham Hospital helped China's Evergrande create an international hospital. Could you start from telling us what kind of reputation Brigham has in medical world and how Evergrande got connected with Brigham?
So Brigham has a great reputation here in the U.S. As a hospital and as a research facility. And it's one of the, Boston here is, you know,famous for all its hospitals, and Brigham is among the top here. So one of the things that China Evergrande was trying to do, Evergrande Group was trying to do in China, was to start a healthcare program and launch a healthcare initiative and build hospitals. And so they tapped into Brigham here to help them build a hospital in Hainan Province. The connection happened, interestingly enough, with there was a professor, math professor at Harvard, Xingtang Yao, who's a very famous math professor, won the Nobel, almost like the Nobel Prize of Mathematics, the Fields Medal. And he had connected with the chairman of the Evergrande Group in China. The professor is quite a big fundraiser, and he had gotten the chairman of Evergrande to help him at one of his math contests in China.And then introduced him to Harvard, and the Evergrande Group gave a big donation to Harvard. Harvard wouldn't say how much, but the Professor Yao said it was about $200 million to Harvard. So around that same time, the money went to the three centers at Harvard, including one connected with the Brigham. And then that's how Brigham got involved in, that's how we believe Brigham got involved in the hospital project in China.
Could you tell us about what kind of hospital they originally planned to build? Who are their target customers and what are the reasons that it failed?
I think the hope was that it would be a cancer hospital and that patients, wealthy patients from China, mainland China, from, you know, Hong Kong, from, you know, Vietnam, just all the countries around there too, would come and get treatment at this hospital. But it was located in a, you know, in Hainan Island, and then even on Hainan, it was located in this part called Buao, a town which is very rural, which was rural, and it was basically fishing villages and farmland that was converted into this big medical complex. And so travel there is very difficult. It's hard to get there from mainland China. You have to take multiple modes of transportation, fly there, and then take a train or take a car to get to the hospital. So it's a difficult place to get to. So even though, you know, it had the Brigham name and this kind of connection to an very top American hospital, for cancer patients, you know, one analyst said, do you want to be a cancer patient? Do you want to travel that far to get treatment? Isn't it easier to, if you live in Shanghai, to just go to hospital in Shanghai if you have an option there? So because of that, I think the location made it very difficult to get to, and I think not a lot of patients came. So it ended up being a very underused facility. And because they were targeting wealthy patients, even on the local patients in Hainan, couldn't afford some of the treatments. So it became difficult to kind of manage the financial balance of the hospital.
How expensive could the treatments?
The prices ranged from what we saw, you know, for some of the more expensive consultative treatments, it could go in several, like $1,000 plus. It's a difficult match if you don't make a lot of money to get treatment there. And initially, it was geared towards more private pay patients, so those who are not on the health insurance, government health insurance.
What exactly was the contribution and duties, and what was the gain for Brigham Health? What kind of financial benefits could Brigham get from Evergrande?
Brigham would not say exactly what their financial benefits were, but they said it was less than 1% of their annual revenues, but that could be anywhere from, you know, $27 million to $33 million a year for the first 3 years. So it's a decent amount of money for any hospital, is money that, you know, the Brigham felt that it wanted and needed. They said that, you know, the money helps them do other things here locally and, you know, serve the local community. The Brigham's revenues are in the billions, so 1% or less than 1% is a small amount, but it's a, when you're dealing with such big numbers, it can be a lot of money.
So this international hospital was intended as a kind of medical tourism project, combined even with golf, and the target group were rich people. There are actually some examples of successful medical tourism projects, right? Is this one less successful, not due to the failure with the whole Evergrande company, but more because of Chinese patients prefer to get medical services close to their home?
Yes, I think that's part of it. Brigham and Dana-Farber said that, or that the Evergrande had delivered on what they were required to do. You know, we haven't been able to see the contracts, or they haven't given us a lot of detail about what the expectations were for the project and the deliverables in the contract. But it does seem like, you know, we spoke to one doctor who said it's understandable that patients want to be treated close to home, especially cancer patients. You know, there's a lot involved in that. So it seems like the location made it very difficult, and not just for patients, but for the doctors too. You know, it was hard to recruit a lot of doctors to come and work there. And then if one of the problems is that, you know, for doctors who are dealing with these specialized care, they need to keep up their skills and practice very frequently. And so if you don't have a lot of patients, you're not practicing your skills. And so that made it difficult to bring doctors to come and work at the hospital, too.
Please give us a summary about what kind of company Evergrande is, according to your research. At the beginning, was it like a match made in heaven, perhaps, a fast-growing Chinese company and the top university in the world?
Yes. I mean, I think Evergrande was this big real estate company. It seemed like it was developing, you know, buildings and projects everywhere in China. I think, you know, we've seen maps of where their projects are, and they're across the country in China. So I think there is a sense that initially that this was a, you know, a very promising relationship that could be built and could last for a long time. I think it has proved to be a less stable company than initially thought. I think there have been people and analysts who have, you know, raised concerns over the years about how Evergrande was conducting its business, whether its accounting was appropriate and right. So I think now it is a very, it is a struggling company, I think it is fair to say. I think right now there's, you know, it got into all these businesses like bottled water, soccer, healthcare. And some businesses like healthcare it knew nothing about. So I think there's been concern about it grew so fast and whether or not it was based on, you know, the finances were there to support that growth.
Do Chinese corporations create a fancy illusion that ensures how promising it could be for U.S. entities collaborating with them? How far is it from reality?
I think there were some signs with Evergrande that that, you know, businesses should have been concerned about. I think the question is how, you know, there were analysts saying this company is perhaps a little more shaky than it should be. You know, there was one analyst we spoke to who said, you know, she had visited a lot of the buildings that Evergrande had built, and they were, many of them were empty. And so she had raised concerns about whether or not this was a Ponzi scheme, you know. So I think there were people who are kind of raising red flags about this company out there. Initially, there was this issue of the hospital project was built as, you know, a 647-bed hospital. And there were questions about, you know, how much marketing was done for the hospital. It seems like, at least in the work we did, that there was very little market research done by Brigham didn't do it, and they expected, I think, Evergrande to do it, and it's unclear whether it was done about whether or not the hospital would be able to attract patients, and that ended up being a problem because there were, from what we understood, only, you know, 10 patients at any one time in this massive, very fancy building of a hospital.
Speaking of contracts between large Chinese corporations and foreign entities, how deep could the Chinese government get involved?
We don't know that for sure. We aren't clear on it. We do know that, you know, one of the attractions of this hospital and this site was that they, the Chinese government was trying to create an area that was a medical hub on Hainan Island. And so that was part of the appeal, was that there was going to be some preferential policies there for medicine, like, you know, drugs that may be not approved on mainland China would be approved on this island for use. So there was an appeal to, you know, be on this island because of some of the policies the Chinese government had been involved in.
At the beginning of the pandemic, Evergrande promised a big new project with Harvard. Do you think Evergrande could continue to deliver?
I think it is going to be hard for Evergrande to continue to deliver. I'm sure you're aware that they have a lot of debt. $300 billion, I think, is the amount of liabilities, and they're having a lot of difficulties in China. So I think at least the experts are concerned about whether Evergrande would be able to deliver even on the COVID money. I think the Harvard project is trying to move forward with the money they have received from Evergrande, but I don't think they're expecting much more.
Could you say Harvard may also get some lessons to learn from the multiple cooperation with Evergrande?
I think there's probably some issues about how reliable funders and donors can be. You know, there's probably a promise of a lot of money, but there is a question of how, if they can deliver on those pledges of funding. You know, the relationship with Evergrande was built at a time when Harvard was very eager, and a lot of universities were very eager to build relationships in China with wealthy Chinese donors. And I think many institutions, not just universities, but even the hospital, were trying to build those relationships. So the question is whether those relationships can last, how much they vetted these donors to see, you know, how they were making their money. Because one of the issues with Evergrande was they had borrowed a lot of money to make and build up buildings and go into these projects. So, you know, there is a question of how long that philosophy of business can last.
And do you think Harvard has guarded its reputation very well in its working with Evergrande?
I think Harvard is very specific about and very careful about where it lends its brand and its name. So I think they are very careful about where they can connect Harvard and the Evergrande group. For example, the Brigham Hospital had the Brigham name on the hospital with the Evergrande group's name, but Harvard's name wasn't on the front door, as to speak. So I think Harvard is very careful about how it uses its name and how its name is used.
Now that the collaboration with Evergrande didn't work, does it hurt Brigham, for example, their reputation as well?
That's a good question. I think there's a lot of questions that have been raised since we've written this story about whether or not, you know, Brigham or any nonprofit hospital here in the U.S. Should be doing these projects overseas, especially to attract, when these hospitals are aimed at wealthy patients. You know, there's this question of whether or not they should just go abroad and just scoop up all the wealthy patients to subsidize healthcare here in the U.S. So I think there have been a lot of suggestions about whether these efforts, because Brigham isn't alone, there are other hospitals, Johns Hopkins, the Mayo Clinic. There are a lot of big-name hospitals in the U.S. that have, you know, have this approach of going abroad and catering to the wealthy in other countries. So I think there are questions about whether that is a worthwhile endeavor for hospitals that are supposed to be not-for-profit here in the U.S.
What could be the reasons that Brigham did not renew the contract with Evergrande last year? Do you consider it as a wise decision, or the contract wouldn't make much sense considering the trouble Evergrande is in?
Brigham says that the contract ended, and so they basically decided not to move further with their relationship. I mean, the timing helps is good for, you know, Brigham. There is a question about whether or not, you know, Evergrande would be able to fulfill any even future promises, the future work there at the hospital. So it is, the hospital still continues to exist and is a working hospital. It's still, you know, now it is taking, you know, also accepting public, the government insurance and trying to appeal to more patients. But, I mean, the timing is interesting because Evergrande's problems have become so enormous now.
以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，我们下次再见。